calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here on this beautiful Friday. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, happy end of the week, whatever it is for you. Hope it's a marvelous day and a great weekend coming up. It is, of course, the first day, the last day of the week, wrapping up our program here for this week. And, of course, the first hour that we have every Friday is Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, the only member of the House of Representatives right now who is an independent, not a Democrat, not a Republican. And his website, house.bernie.gov or bernie.org. Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here. By the way, let me just mention very quickly our telephone number. If you have any questions for Bernie, comments, concerns, critiques, anything you'd like to share with us, you're welcome to call in our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and just click live chat, and you can drop in there. So, Bernie, Karl Rove is the screaming headline of the week. It's the story du jour. And today, in fact, the Republicans are trying to spin it. I got the talking points about 3 hours ago from that went out to all the talk show hosts across the United States, saying that now it's time to stop attacking Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame. That's not working. Wilson's fighting back. It's time to start attacking Judy Miller. And I kid you not, it's time to start attacking Judy Miller and Matt Cooper and saying that it's their fault. They were the ones who actually were outing the CIA agent, and they're the ones who told Karl Rove. That's going to be the official talking point for today.
Well, the thing about these guys is they're never on the defensive, and they assume that the media is going to be complacent and will follow their line, and many of the media will. And you just keep attacking and attacking and attacking. You divert attention away from the real issues, which is always the case. That is their modus operandi. You switch gears and you go after people. And, of course, the thing about Karl Rove, which I hope most of the listeners know, well above and beyond this issue, is Rove is one of the architects of the kind of ugly and disgusting politics that we see so much in America today, the politics of personal destruction. Instead of having a democracy where honest people debate the issues and honest people can have differences of opinion on the issues, what Rove consistently over his career has done is moved to vicious personal attacks on individuals so that they don't have to discuss the real issues facing the American people. And that was true when Bush first ran for president against John McCain. And in the South, what was it, South Carolina, I think it was?
Yes, it was, yeah. The push polls you're talking about?
Yeah, where there were these horrible telephone calls going out to people making all kinds of scurrilous attacks on John McCain, that he was crazy, that he was, homosexual, that he was father of a black child. I mean, all kinds of the lowest of the low. John Kerry, you have in the last campaign, I know people like Kerry, they don't like Kerry. Here is a guy who was in Vietnam. Here is a guy who used his gun. Here is a guy who was shot. And suddenly John Kerry becomes the target of vicious attacks on his military record, while the president, of course, never went over there, and there are strong suggestions that he avoided serving in Vietnam.
And in fact that he was AWOL.
But you divert attention and you attack. Max Cleland, former senator from Georgia, is a guy who lost three limbs in Vietnam. He was attacked for being unpatriotic. So what you do, what their modus operandi, and it takes advantage of a compliant media in many respects, is you shift gear away from the issue and you attack, you attack, you attack, and you attempt to put the other side on the defensive. That's what they always do. And in the process, they really do an enormous disservice to democracy in America. Because what democracy is supposed to be about is let's take a look at the problems facing our country. Let's see how we can go forward in resolving those problems. Let's respect other people's points of view. Neither you nor I or anybody you're listening has all the answers. Let's debate the issues. Sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. That's called democracy. And these people, to a very significant degree, are undermining that concept. And Karl Rove is one of the architects of that approach. Unfortunately, it very often works. but in the process it undermines democracy and what this country is supposed to be about.
And Karl Rove learned that at the feet of Lee Atwater.
Right, who later, by the way, as he was dying, I think repented.
Yes, yeah, he was dying of brain cancer, and he apologized to Michael Dukakis for the way that they had gone after him, and said, please, to the American people, the people in politics, said, please don't do what I've done.
And unfortunately, despite Atwater's repenting in a sense, that's exactly what Karl Rove and junior Karl Roves all over America are doing. And unfortunately, it works in many ways. And what we have got to do, Tom, and I believe this very strongly, and I think it's not only right for American democracy, I believe it can work because I have more respect for the American people than folks like Karl Rove. And that is, let's look at the issues. Let's look at the most important issues facing ordinary people in America. You know, whether it's the economy. I hold town meetings all over the state of Vermont. And the first question that I always ask when I speak to Vermonters is, tell me, how is the middle class doing? How many of you think the middle class is expanding, doing better? How many of you think the middle class is doing worse? And overwhelmingly, people raise their hands and they say, we are worried about the future of the middle class. We're working longer hours for low wages. We're losing good-paying jobs. The new jobs that are being created often are low-wage with minimal benefits. We're worried that our kids, for the first time in the modern history of America, may have a lower standard of living than we do. And all of this takes place in the midst of a huge increase in worker productivity. Historically, when we have an increase in worker productivity, it means that wages are going up. But as every worker in America knows, that is not the case. For millions of workers, their real inflation accounted for wages are going down. Poverty is going up. The gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. In terms of the environment, I think we stand at a moment with gas prices soaring, wondering what is the Bush administration doing about energy policy. Working people in rural areas are paying $2.50 for a gallon of gas. Their real wages are declining because they're spending so much to get to work. What is the policy of the Bush administration? Do they have any? Corporate profits. Exxon is now the most profitable corporation in America. The big oil companies are making out like bandits. The Bush administration, a great proponent of international free trade, has not had a word to say to the World Trade Organization, WTO, about OPEC, which is a cartel. And even more shamefully, we now have the technology to be driving vehicles to get 50, 60, 70 miles per gallon. And unbelievably, the cars we are driving today have a worse mileage per gallon average than was the case 5 or 10 years ago. We're moving in the wrong direction. Sustainable energy is out there, wind, solar power. It's all sitting in front of us, requiring investments. And yet we're putting billions and billions of dollars into subsidizing the old fossil fuel energy system. In terms of civil liberties, an issue that people are very concerned about, my experience has been it's not just progressives, and I'm proud to be one of the most progressive members in Congress.
In fact, you started the Progressive Caucus, did you not?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Pardon my interrupting you. But
yeah, we have now about 55 members in the Progressive Caucus, now being chaired by Lynn Woolsey of California and Barbara Lee of California, two very able members of Congress. But it's not just progressives who are concerned about privacy issues in America and civil liberties and the USA Patriot Act. A lot of conservatives are as well. We should be talking about that. How do we deal with terrorism? And in my view, as we just saw last week in London, terrorism is serious business. So the government has got to be vigilant in protecting the American people and fighting terrorism. But can we do that without undermining the freedoms that make us a great country? I think we can do it. I don't think we have to surrender those freedoms. It's a challenge. But that's an issue that we have got to be focusing on. In terms of media, an issue I know, Tom, that you have been a leader in this country on, making sure that the American people can hear diverse points of view. You're not going to be a free country. You're not going to be a vibrant democracy if we only hear one point of view. And the Bush administration concerns me very, very much on this issue. Not only their efforts to further deregulate American media, which means that a handful of smaller and smaller number of multinational media conglomerates will own and control what we see, hear, and read. They're now going after, in an unprecedented way, public media, public radio, public television, and putting Republican operatives in important positions, and basically trying to make these independent, historically independent networks arms of the Republican Party. And that is just an outrage. You know, in terms of the war in Iraq and our foreign policy, et cetera, et cetera. So there are so many important issues that we have got to be discussing. We need, in my view, to totally revitalize politics in America so that people, ordinary people, understand that what happens in Washington is of enormous significance to them and their kids and their grandchildren. And that's, you know, the kind of effort that I think we have to continue going forward on.
Yeah, I agree. And Bernie, just in the 2 minutes we have before we take a break, and then we'll go to our callers. The phone lines are starting to stack up. Two quick questions. Number one, you've been in politics for a lot of years. How do you handle it when your opponents do the Karl Rove strategy and attack you? And what's your advice for politicians? And number two, gas prices are exploding for the middle class. Yet 3 days ago, the Wall Street Journal had a headline. The Treasury Department or the government or Greenspan or the Fed, somebody said, there is no middle class inflation. Where do they come up with this?
Well, I mean, Greenspan has played a horrendous historical role, and I'm on the Financial Services Committee, and I think, you know, I've helped turn that committee around a little bit, because I got to tell you, when Greenspan used to come before the committee, it's like people got out the red carpet and Republicans and Democrats. This guy was like a savior. Oh, my God, Alan Greenspan is coming. And I think increasingly people now understand that Alan Greenspan is not some kind of brilliant economist. He is an extreme right-wing political guy who represents the largest corporations in America. This is a guy, in responding to a question that I asked him, said that he supports abolishing the minimum wage. And if people in America are going to work for $1 an hour, $2 an hour, that's okay for Alan Greenspan. Alan Greenspan is a guy who on every single instance believes in huge tax breaks for the wealthy. And then he says, gee, the deficit is going up. We're going to have to cut back on Social Security. We're going to have to cut back on Medicare. So to my mind, I don't have a whole lot of respect for Alan Greenspan. In terms of how you deal with these personal attacks, it's tough stuff. I mean, it is tough stuff. You do not want to go down to the basement in the vulgarity of your opponents. You don't want to fight on their level. I myself, you know, as somebody who's been in office in Vermont, 8 years as mayor of the largest city, Burlington, and now 15 years in the United States Congress, I've never run a negative television ad. I've never run a negative radio ad, newspaper ad. I don't do that. And I hope that I never have to do that. And in Vermont, that works. I don't know that necessarily that might work elsewhere.
Yeah, that's what Dukakis and Kerry both tried to do, and at least in the beginning, and they got whacked for it. It's a really tough one.
It is.
It is 20 minutes after the hour. It's Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us for the hour. If you'd like to talk with Bernie, our telephone number 1-866-889-8894. Bernie's website, bernie.house.gov or bernie.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. It's Friday morning or Friday after, whatever, the first hour of our three-hour program here on Friday. And Congressman Bernie Sanders always with us on the first hour on Friday. And our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. If you have a question for Bernie, Patricia in Florida on the line. Hey, Patricia.
Hey, Tom. It's great to have you there. We need to have a voice, that's for sure.
Thank you.
I just want to make a statement, and then I'll get off the phone. What happened to principles, basic principles in this country? Anyone who has half a brain knows to suggest Rove had no idea this woman wasn't an undercover agent is like suggesting the Twin Towers coming down was just our imagination. I'm a native New Yorker, and I could tell you I've just came back from New York. To think that we in New York have to accept the fact that this president of ours has put Osama bin Laden on the back burner is an insult to all of us New Yorkers. And having a voice finally out there, which is people like you and Bernie Sanders, to stand up for us, the small peons in this world, it just makes me so happy. And the Wall Street Journal is no friend of the liberals, yet 86% of Americans want Rove fired. Why is that? Because they woke up and they're finally smelling the coffee. They see that we've all been made fools of by one man.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Patricia. Bernie, your comments?
Well, I think Patricia makes a very good point. I think the American people are catching on. And it's not only the Karl Rove's ugly type of politics, but it's this disastrous Bush administration. You know, one of the things that we don't talk about, I was just thinking about this a moment ago, the last time that I've looked at this thing, and they have changed a little bit, Bush has been president for 5 years. He has given huge tax breaks, hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the richest 1%, under the guise that it is job-creating, trickle-down theory. Tom, do you know how many private sector jobs have been created since George Bush has been president?
I think we're at a net negative, are we not? Like 20,000 or something?
Exactly. The last thought I look, I mean, maybe it changed a little bit. This guy has not created one net new private sector job. All of the new jobs have been created in the big, bad government sector.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, the government's certainly grown under him, just as it did under Reagan, and it shrank under Clinton. And the Republicans are still running around going, government's bad, we're the party of small government. I don't get it. It's absolutely baffling. Okay, let's move along here. Barry in Kansas City on the line. Hey, Barry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on with Congressman Sanders.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call. Congressman Sanders, I'm a big fan of yours, and I really appreciate you and what you do for our country.
Thank you, Barry.
I have a question for you. I'm feeling overwhelmed and trying to follow all the issues. I'm interested in everything that you've been talking about, of course. I guess my question is, I've become really frustrated with the representatives of my state, which is Kansas. And I feel like I write them, I call them, and then they go, and it feels to me like they're just voting their conscience and they aren't really listening to the people who they represent. And for example, I just heard that there's this legislation coming up that's being debated about Codex and whether supplements are going to be extremely regulated by the pharmaceutical companies. If I hadn't been listening to this all-night radio program, I would have never heard of it. So I guess I have a two-pronged question. What is the criteria for you all getting feedback from your constituents, and are we really listened to? And then also, is there any criteria for you all informing us of what you're debating? Those are my questions.
Boy,
thank you,
Barry. Those are excellent questions. In Vermont, let me speak what we try to do here in Vermont. We're a small state, and what I try to do is hold as many town meetings as humanly possible. I probably have had more town meetings than all other public officials in the state of Vermont combined, because I think it's important to get out to the people.
Bernie,
Tom, let's get back to that question.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. We have a break coming up, so if we can come back and revisit
sure.
this on the other side. Plus,
yes,
we've got a whole slate full of callers here moving along as we do. 1-866-889-8894. Brunch with Bernie, our regular weekly session with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here.
Yes, other than telling us how to live, think, marry, pray, vote, invest, educate our children, and now die, I think the Republicans have done a fine job of getting government out of our personal lives. A quote from our local paper here, the Oregonian, the other day. Welcome back, my friends. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment. I'm Tom Hartman. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Rick and, Bernie, you wanted to finish.
I wanted to say, because Barry asked a very important issue.
Yeah.
So to answer Barry's question, yes, it does matter when members of Congress receive hundreds of emails or telephone calls on an issue. But the other thing that we can do, Barry, is that if your member of Congress is not prepared to have open town meetings, not like George Bush's town meetings, where the only people who can go there have to agree with them. But if he or she is not prepared to have open town meetings, you have those town meetings, and you invite your representative at a convenient time to come. And if your representative will not come and meet with the people, I hope the people will take that into consideration at election time.
So start having town hall meetings.
Start organizing.
Right.
Yes.
Rent a room in a library, get
talk
to a local church.
And tell them, look, what day can you come? You know, members of Congress spend a lot of time in Washington, and they're busy. Try to work it out. But you invite them. If they're not going to do those meetings, you invite them to your meetings.
There you go. Okay, well said. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick.
Yes, good day, gentlemen.
Hi, Rick.
Bernie, I wanted to ask you something that Congressman Peter King, I don't know how well you know him, but Tom told me that he was actually the one that said this when I heard Limbaugh say it on the radio show. He was only quoting King. Now, I know that King showed a lot of guts during the Clinton impeachment by being against it. And what happened is I called my Congressman Ehlers here in town and talked to the girl in his office. And when I asked her if this was a reprehensible comment, she said she couldn't make that call. And then I had quite a lengthy conversation with King's legislative aide, and basically he just says that, well, you took it out of context. He was talking about shooting these people figuratively. I mean, what has happened to the Republican Party that people like Peter King make statements like that? And not only are they defending Karl Rove, now they're saying that, you know, that a journalist, Tim Russert, and Valerie Plame and his husband should be shot. To me, this is extremely dangerous, don't you think?
Of course. I mean, you know, that kind of rhetoric, they are using it, you know, figuratively, not literally. But, you know, we're just reading the paper here in Vermont. There was some guy picked up who was prepared to take a rifle, I gather, and go to the interstate and start shooting people. Police fortunately got him. I mean, you got a lot of people who have very serious mental problems in this country. And if they're hearing political leaders talking about, quote-unquote, shooting people, obviously that is a very dangerous and stupid thing for any responsible person to say.
1-866-889-8894. Jim in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom Harmon, how you doing?
Great.
I've got a two-fold question. I'm curious about Alan Greenspan's party affiliation, and has there been any research involved with, like, George Bush's first 4 years, how interest rates drop, and then he got his elected for his second term, and now they're climbing again? Or is that a coincidence?
In terms of Greenspan's political affiliations, probably he would tell you that he works with everybody and doesn't have any. He has, if my memory is correct, I won't swear to you, but I believe we did a little research on this. He contributed to Jesse Helms. And I think his philosophy is what you would call Ayn Rand, libertarian. I mean, limited, very, very limited government, no minimum wage, absolute free trade, no matter what it means for workers in America. So I would, you know, to me, it looks like he is an extreme right-wing Republican. I don't know what he would say. I can't answer the other question that Jim gave. I don't know.
Well, just very quickly, he was also inducted into the Objectivist cult by Ayn Rand in her apartment in New York City in the 1950s. 1956 sticks in my head. And there's a great book that just came out about Greenspan called Greenspan's Fraud by an author, an economist by the name of Ravi Batra, a New York Times best-selling economist. And, in fact, it's my book of the month on BuzzFlash.com right now. If you go to BuzzFlash.com, there's a book review of it, an extensive book review that lays out many of the specific frauds that Greenspan has committed against the American people.
But
it's
this whole
brilliant
business
book.
Of Ayn Rand is basically that we should eliminate many of the functions of government and give power over to the multinationals and the wealthy against the rest of us. And it leads to where Bush is going, to the privatization of Social Security and Medicare and the Veterans Administration, and allow the wealthy and the powerful to run our country.
Yeah, and this is not a good thing. Dennis in Louisville, Kentucky on the line. Hey, Dennis, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
Missed you last week, Congressman. The thing I'm concerned about is all this attention being paid to Karl Rove and the incident, and, you know, I think they're going to be doing the definition of is or if, and you know, to me, it's a big smoking screen. I think our country has bigger problems to worry. You know, I think Bush is guilty of treason on this level, and the fact that he's letting our multinationals take entire industries and technology to communist China And I think that should be the focus on it. He, you know, basically he's doing what Rosenberg did with Russia, you know, and they're giving away all the secrets to China. And they complained about it under Clinton with the L'Oreal. I think it was the L'Oreal company.
L'Oreal company, yeah.
And, you know, now they're feeding the monster that they, you know, all the
technology. Hey, Dennis, stay on. You know, Dennis has raised, in my view, a huge issue. A huge, huge issue. And it, you're quite right, Dennis. It does not get the discussion that it needs. Here's what the issue is. And Dennis, I think, hit the nail right on the head. You have multinational corporations, you name them, virtually all of them, with the very strong support of the Bush administration, are saying, we no longer are prepared to pay workers in the United States of America a living wage. It is our intention, and they are very overt and open about it. It is our intention to go to China, pay people there 30 cents an hour, 50 cents an hour, share our technology with China, whose military prowess is growing stronger every day, and that's what these guys are prepared to do. This is not only an issue of economics in America, and the loss of good-paying jobs, it is certainly a national security issue. It's an issue of national sovereignty. It is an issue of which side corporate America is on. Are they on the side of the American people or on China's side?
That's what I wish somebody would point out. You know, nobody's pointing this out. We're giving technology away. We're giving our industrial base away.
Well, Dennis, let me mention something to you, because you're right on to a very important issue. We offered an amendment 2 weeks ago, which won overwhelmingly. Now we will see if we can carry it in the Senate and the conference committee. Here you have a situation where an American, well, a corporation owned by the British government, located in the United States, not only wants to build nuclear power plants in China, they want to share that technology with China. And you're seeing this in almost every industry in this country. So, Dennis, you are on to a huge issue. It's not economic. It is certainly national defense, national sovereignty. Whose side is George Bush on and these multinationals? The American middle class or China and the multinational corporations? That's the issue.
Thank you, Dennis. And Bernie, probably you haven't seen this. This was published in the Financial Times of London at 3 o'clock this morning. And the headline, Top Chinese General Warns U.S. Over Attack. And the first two sentences, China is prepared to use nuclear weapons against the United States if it is attacked by Washington during a confrontation over Taiwan, a Chinese general said on Thursday. Quote, if the now they're claiming first strike doctrine here. If the Americans draw their missiles and position guided ammunition on the target on a target zone in China's territory, I think we will have to respond with nuclear weapons, said General Zhu Shengshu. He went on to say, of course, the Americans will have to be prepared that hundreds of their cities will be destroyed by the Chinese. And in this, he is asserting specifically a first strike option.
Well, two issues here. I mean, clearly, this is obviously a country you want unfettered free trade with, and you want large corporations to be going to and giving them the technology. Obviously, that makes a lot of sense based on what you are hearing. And second of all, here we have the irony of the Chinese government, in a sense, quoting George Bush, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Rick Fisher, former U.S. congressional official and authority in the Chinese military, this is from the article in the Financial Times, said the specific nature of the threat is a new addition to China's public discourse. Their official doctrine had called for no first use of nuclear weapons since their first atomic test in 64. But then they add, General Zhu is not the first Chinese official to refer to the possibility of such weapons used first in a conflict over Taiwan. And they point to another guy who said the same thing. Basically, they're saying if we simply target, you know, they have a way of knowing if you've locked your radar onto them. If we simply target them, they're going to launch their missiles and take out our
cities. But here's the point. The point, too, and this is one of the reasons why many of us in Congress opposed the war in Iraq based on a preemptive strike doctrine, is what we said over and over again. If it's good for the United States, if we can go to war anytime we want, why will not the Chinese, the Russians, any other country on earth use that same doctrine? So in a sense, what you're hearing from the Chinese now is, hey, George Bush did it in Iraq. Why can't we do it?
Yeah, against America. Let's move back to the phones. Tom in Minneapolis on the line. Thanks for calling, Tom.
Hi. Bernie, you talked about how the GOP, they have only disdain for democracy and the middle class. And Tom always talks about this. And we liberals have to educate and remind citizens of what genuine democracy is. But to drive this point home, we can't just say that. We have to use examples on how they are doing this by unmasking and how they have had a 20-year campaign to distort and conflate democracy with laissez-faire corporatism.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned productivity gains. Over the last 20 years, you know, the gains have been going up and up, but the worker gets less and less. And CEOs and these corporate aristocrats have been capturing most of these worker productivity gains because labor unions have been decimated and have no workplace democracy, no voice for citizens in a place where they spend half their working life. Americans basically have only weekend democracy, and even that is shaky. And, you know, Tom had a few weeks ago a union leader on, and Tom suggested that labor should market unions as being synonymous with workplace democracy, and this union leader replied that would be too abstract. Now, even when leaders...
Tom, do you have a question for Bernie?
Well, I'm saying we have to get to the point and show Americans through examples that right. democracy is where it's at. These guys do not believe in democracy.
Right. Yeah, well said. Well said.
I mean, Tom's point is very important, and that is democracy does not simply mean the right to vote once every 2 years or 4 years. That's important. But democracy means having control over your own lives. And that includes having a decent income and choices about the kind of jobs you can have and some control over what happens to you when you're working 8 or 10 hours a day.
And a labor union is democracy in the workplace.
Absolutely.
Susan in California on the line. Hey, Susan, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yeah, hi, Bernie and Tom. I think you're just so great. I have a question. I got a letter from a friend. I sent one of these, send this letter to all your Republican friends about Social Security, so I just took a chance and sent it. And I got back this letter that, oh, my God, I just thought maybe Rush Limbaugh had written it, you know. So there's a couple of things in here. I'm not going to answer him point for point because I realize that there's something else going on here and that he believes that Democrats don't take responsibility for themselves and see themselves as victims. And since he doesn't, you know, blah, blah. So it's stupid to take up all the issues. But I do want to know, he said something in here that Johnson, it says that Johnson said, and it comes from the Johnson Library, that if we get these N-words on welfare, they'll be voting Democrat for the next 100 years. And I just can't believe that he said, well, he might have said it, but I went to the Johnson Library last night online, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that's a true...
No, I have never heard that.
Yeah.
No, Lyndon Johnson, you know, is certainly at great risk. In fact, quite the opposite. But Lyndon Johnson said to, I think, some of his colleagues, in fighting for the civil rights legislation, the important voting rights legislation that he passed, is, you know what, I believe, he said, is that, in fact, we are going to be losing the South in years to come.
They came to him, his chief political advisor, and it might have been Bill Moyers, in fact. I'm pretty sure it was Bill Moyers who told me this story. But his chief political advisor came to Lyndon Johnson and said, if we continue to push for integration in the South and for the Civil Rights Act, we will lose the South for the Democrats for at least a generation. And Lyndon Johnson said, and I'm pretty sure this is a verbatim quote, if that's the price we as a Democratic Party have to pay for integration in the South and for the end of segregation in the United States, that's a price I'm willing to pay.
So, in fact, quite the opposite is true, is that as a result of the courage of Johnson in taking on racism in the South, the Democratic Party paid a very, very heavy price for that. That was part of the Nixon strategy, Reagan strategy, and so forth.
Yeah, ways to exploit that. Danny in Charlotte, North Carolina on the line. Hey, Danny.
Hi, Tom, Congressman. I just had a quick question for Mr. Sanders. Do you think, well, you know, at first I thought the Karl Rove situation was taken away from the more important things on the table, but then I started thinking, Mr. Sanders, do you think that if this Karl Rove situation goes to court, do you think they could subpoena George Bush and maybe in a roundabout way he would have to put down, you know, on oath, you know, do you think he could go to court and maybe some of these other issues might come to light? And I'll hang up and I'll listen.
Well, sorry, Danny, I honestly don't know the answer to that. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know if they would be able to get Bush into court. So, sorry, I can't answer that.
Okay, Monica in Illinois. We've got about a half a minute here, Monica, if it's a quick question.
Hi, thanks. Hey, real quick, Congressman Sanders, thanks. My congressman is Jerry Weller from the 11th District in Illinois, and he definitely has a conflict of interest in the CAFCA vote because of his marriage and his investment interest down in Nicaragua. How can the House keep him from voting? I definitely think that, you know, they should do something and stop him from doing that.
Well, that's an interesting question. That's not the way it works. If we looked at conflicts of interest and all of the millionaires in the Senate and the billionaires who gave themselves, voted for huge tax breaks, certainly would not have been able to vote for that as well. I think that's an issue that people should be raising, conflicts of interest. And this whole CAFTA thing, I have to tell you, for a dozen different reasons, is a disaster. And the good news on that, Monica, is I think we're going to win that vote.
Oh, that's great. In the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
CAFTA's going down.
We hope.
From your lips to God's ears, Bernie. Let's hope. Okay, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our number 866-889-8894. We'll be back after this break with more of your calls. I'm Tom Harbin. The Tom Harbin Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for, we the people of the United States of America.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Now you don't know my name, but you know who I am. I'm your everyday work hard, play hard, raise kids and pray hard, common man.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. We have quite a few calls in just a few minutes, so please try to be quick with your questions. Michelle in Long Beach for Congressman Bernie Sanders. You're live and on the air.
Good morning, men.
Good morning.
Fighting the fight. Hey, my quick question is, Bernie, I need to know if they voted on the Patriot Act, if they're even looking at the Security and Freedoms Insurance Act, and that's what's important to me, Bernie.
Okay, Michelle, the
thank you.
The act just came out of the Judiciary Committee yesterday or on Wednesday, can't remember which. We think it will probably go to the floor of the House, and we hope that they will allow for some amendments on the floor of the House. What has passed through the Senate and the House at this point is totally inadequate to answer your question in terms of protecting American constitutional rights.
Thank you very much, Bernie. Francis in Eureka, California,
California
on the line.
Hey, Francis.
John, here I am. Thank you. Taiwan is a feng shui issue for China.
Meaning?
That's why China will never want to let it go. I don't remember the exact quote. It was over the news about, and it was sort of an artistic description. Taiwan is like a, I would butcher it up to give it in detail.
Right.
But it was like a piece of China would be missing.
Right.
And they described it artistically, and it's like, feng shui. They never let it go, and it's deeply cultural.
Okay. Thank you for that, Francis. Jeremy in Cleveland on the line. Jeremy?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I just was wondering, how come the war on drugs has taken a backseat to anything, and it's not even in the news or discussed by anyone anymore?
Well, I don't know that's quite true. I think many of us are concerned that our country is spending billions of dollars locking up larger numbers of people who have never committed a violent crime. I think the only reason it's probably not discussed is because you've got a war and you've got a huge deficit and you've got Karl Rove and you've got Supreme Court nominees and all that other stuff. So you're right. In a sense, it's becoming a little bit on the back burner, but it remains a very important issue.
There's all this so-called sexy stuff out there that feeds the infotainment machine, Bernie. Yeah, Bernie, I hope you track down this. You know, what's the deal with China threatening us with nuclear weapons yesterday?
I will track that down.
I'd love to hear your take on that next week. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us. The website, house.bernie.gov or bernie.org for Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Tom.
Thanks for being with
us. Bye-bye.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Well, or at least our say in a democracy in the United States.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, Live 365's American FM, and on WhiteRoseSociety.org, also podcast there, as well as on Apple's iTunes. Welcome back to our program. Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, in just a minute. And TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room, where you will find some of the strangest, most brilliant, no, seriously, some of the most extraordinary people on the entire Internet. Some of the conversations that they have there, sometimes I'm just, that we have there, because I participate during the breaks very often, and it just boggles my mind occasionally. Sometimes how brilliant they are, and sometimes how unusual they are. Jim in Oregon on the line. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind today?
Yeah. Hey, where are you located?
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, well, I'm in the same state. I'm in Central Oregon.
Yeah, okay. So what's up?
I'm a lifelong Portland resident. How long have you lived in Portland?
3 months. Going on 4.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I guess Oregon now is the great liberal state, huh? More than California and New York. I mean, our whole executive branch is Democrats, but it's not liberal enough. I'm just wondering.
Well, Karen Minnis would argue with you, but anyhow, Jim, what's your question?
Karen Minnis. That's Adolf Hitler's wife, right?
Yeah, she runs. For those who don't know, we shouldn't be having these inside Oregon conversations here on a national program.
Eva Braun.
Karen Minnis is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, which is controlled by the Republicans in the state. In any case, your question.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, do you think that the liberal talk radio is making any headway against George Bush? I mean, let me put it this way. I mean, we could go on forever and ever about George Bush is bad and George Bush did this and that. But, less than 1% of the population in the 60s there started the end of the Vietnam War.
Well,
it's just a bunch of dirty hippies, you know.
Yeah.
And you know what's really,
Jim? I'm sorry. I'm just not going down that road with you. Yes, I think that progressive talk radio is having an impact on the United States. It's having a significant impact. And no, I don't think that 1% of Americans ended the Vietnam War. I think it was well more than 50%. And anybody who says it's 1%, is sadly misinformed. Logan in New York City on the line. Hey, Logan, what's on your mind today?
I was just wondering, I mean, the evidence bears it out. It just seems like the neocon agenda is to incite terrorist attacks so they can have their Pearl Harbors.
Well, they're certainly doing a good job of it, aren't they? I mean,
could it be part of their, could it be a hidden policy of theirs?
There are times when I wonder, if you just look empirically, if you just took off the table all questions of morality and would the Bushies really do this, and just set all that aside and say, what have their policies done? What their policies have done is they've turned the world against us. They've turned a billion Muslims against us. They've incited hatred against us all across the world. And it's just set this thing up to be worse and worse and worse. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy for the United States. David Schwerin is with us. David is the author of a book called Conscious Globalism, What's Wrong with the World and How to Fix It. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
What's wrong with the world and how do we fix it?
Well, what's wrong with the world is pretty obvious. Look around and you see corporate fraud, political scandals, environmental degradation, you name it. It's pretty obvious. The way we fix it is to change our beliefs. The basic problem behind all our problems is that we believe we're all separate and autonomous rather than connected and interdependent.
Now, extending that logic in reading your book, it seems to me that you're advocating absolute free trade, no borders, just kick the doors open.
Well, not really. I'm for free trade because all borders are arbitrary and temporary. I mean, to set up a border and say you can't go across here and trade is ridiculous. However,
now, hang on just a second, David. The border of a family, is that arbitrary and temporary?
The border of a family. Explain
right.
What you mean.
A family is a unit.
Right.
However you define a family, mom, dad, kids, mom, mm-hmm. dad, and kids. Is that arbitrary and temporary?
Well, it's certainly temporary. The family doesn't last forever.
Well, it's going to last as long as the people are alive. So for the purposes of talking, in our lifetimes, it's not temporary. It's throughout the lifetimes of the people, is it not?
Yeah, sure.
Is it arbitrary?
Is it arbitrary? Well, we can get into a philosophical discussion on that. But,
well, I'm not trying to make this a philosophical discussion. My point is that the basic human instinct is to form into tribal units and family units. That's a basic human instinct.
But those units change. They expand. Once we were cavemen, and then we went into tribes, and then we keep expanding. And that's why it's just natural to be global at this point. It's necessary. We have to. That's how. If we all stayed as tribes, that's why we have wars. We have to see that the commonality between people, not the differences.
How do you explain the fact that there were hundreds of tribes in North America who were not having wars? War when North America was first discovered, and you go back and read the actual accounts from the 1500s and 1600s of the people who came here and explored, or for that matter, just read Meriwether Lewis's diary. The vast majority of Native Americans were not involved in warfare. In fact, they had developed games that they used to resolve conflicts like who was going to marry whom or where tribal boundaries were. And lacrosse is probably the most famous of those games. And yet they maintained their tribal integrity, their tribal autonomy. They maintained their identity. What's wrong with that?
Well, you're getting off on you're categorizing me wrong. I'm for equity and sustainability. I don't want trade if it's inequitable or unsustainable. There's no difference between my position and probably yours. But I think free trade it theoretically is absolutely necessary. The way it's conducted.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because there's no reason not to trade. Why should you stop trading with somebody? What's the reason for not trading with somebody?
To protect your domestic industries.
Excuse me?
To protect your domestic industry.
Why
do you
want to protect
the United States
for
200
years? Absolutely no reason to protect domestic industries. Why? Did you know that free trade has resulted in the U.S. wealth increasing by $1 trillion a year?
I'm sorry, David, we are now broke. When Ronald Reagan came into office, the United States was the largest creditor in the world. More countries owed us money than any other country in the world. Today, we are the biggest debtor in the world. We have to borrow $2 billion a day.
We spend too much. Well, we spend too much. It has nothing to do with trade. We have a $600 billion
trade deficit right now. We're borrowing money from China in order to continue to be able to buy things.
I am not for deficits, for sure.
And China just threatened us with nuclear weapons yesterday.
They did?
Yes, they did.
Where did you hear that?
It's in the Financial Times.
Okay. Well, I didn't read that, and I'm not sure what you're referring to.
I'll read you the story here. This is from the Financial Times. Alexander Harney in Beijing and Dmitry Sipolov and Edward Alden in Washington, D.C. China's prepared to use nuclear weapons against the U.S. if it's attacked by Washington during a confrontation over Taiwan. They go on to say that if we so much as aim a missile at them, if they detect the fact that our radar has locked onto them, they will then take out our cities. Here's the actual quote. General Zhu Shenzhou. They're now using George Bush's first strike doctrine. If the Americans draw their missiles and position guided ammunition on the target zone of China's territory, we will have to respond with nuclear weapons. The Americans will have to be prepared that hundreds of their cities will be destroyed by the Chinese.
Isn't that what we did with Cuba? When the Russians had missiles there, we said we were going to destroy them? You know, it's the same way.
We were not trading with Cuba. China is our major trading partner. If Walmart were a country, it would be the fifth largest country to do trade with China. We are shoveling our money over to China in exchange for cheap labor. We're basically...
But do you know how much money we save, the consumers save on all their expenses? I mean, all their expenditures?
David, I would much rather have a decent wage and pay 30 cents more for the stuff at Walmart and be able to buy more of it than have not have a lousy job and no wages and be able to buy cheap stuff at Walmart.
Well, our unemployment rate is extremely low versus the rest of the world.
David, our underemployment rate is one of the worst in the industrialized world.
No, I don't think that's true.
We have more people in this country.
There's certainly people underemployed, but it's not the worst in the industrialized world.
David, I have to assume you've never lived in Europe.
I have not lived in Europe, no.
Yeah, well, I have, and I can tell you, what we have right now in this country sucks. We have more and more people in this country who are falling out of the middle class and falling into the ranks of the working poor because of the trade policies that you're advocating.
Well, I don't understand. What are you suggesting?
What I'm suggesting is that for 200 years in this country, until Reagan came along and started deconstructing it, we had a policy where we said, okay, the United States, every every geographic economic unit has its own unique characteristics. They have their own natural resources or lack of natural resources. They have their own priorities. They have their own standards, their, you know, whatever. But mostly it has to do with, you know, the gifts of geography. But nonetheless, they, you know, for example, China has no natural resources. We have a lot of natural resources. Or Japan, rather, has no natural resources. And they figured out a way to deal with that. And what countries have traditionally done, our first one was passed in 1787, is they passed tariff laws where you say, okay, if it's going to cost, if there's a dollar's worth of labor and a $10 in a pair of tennis shoes manufactured in the United States, and it's only cost 10 cents to make that pair of tennis shoes in Malaysia, you can make those tennis shoes in Malaysia, no problem. But when you import them into the United States, there's a 90-cent tax, a tariff on that.
And every consumer pays that.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And so everybody in the United States is still paying the same price for those shoes as if they were made in the United States, if they're made in Malaysia.
But they could be paying a lot less.
And then they wouldn't have the jobs. That's right. They could pay less, and they could flip
birds. 5% unemployment rate. You know, people are hurt.
We have a 5% unemployment rate, David. We have a 30% underemployment. How many Americans in 1980, 35% of Americans with a single salary could support a family, have a pension, put people through work? In 1950, it was 70% of Americans. Now it's about 15% of Americans.
Let me ask you this. Are you a humanitarian? Do you believe in the goodness of people and know everyone should have a job and a basic standard of living?
What's your point?
My point is, the poverty around the world is so much greater than what is the United States. Yes, people are hurt in the United States, and they should be helped. I'm absolutely for that. But the people who are gaining jobs around the world are living at a dollar a day. How can you feel badly for Americans who are, you know, so much better off?
If other countries were to do the same thing that Japan did, that Japan is doing right now, that China is doing right now, that India is doing right now, that we stopped doing in the 1980s. Which is saying that if you have a product that you want to sell to us that we have no interest in manufacturing, no benefit to us in manufacturing, or that you can uniquely make, which is the whole point of Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. His example in Wealth of Nations was about how the Irish might make sweaters, the French would make wine, and the British would make milk. And how each one of them had these unique characteristics. And so in those areas, you should have trade. But if you're talking about making tennis shoes here or making tennis shoes in Malaysia, all you're going to succeed in doing with your policies is wiping out the jobs of people who would make tennis shoes here. And what's the benefit of that?
More jobs have been created in the last 10 years than have been lost by far. You're making it sound like we're, you know, that the unemployment rate, there is underemployment. People are, yes, they have to accept sometimes jobs that are inferior, but they need to be helped.
No, they're having to accept those jobs because of so-called free trade. We're talking with David Schwerin. Conscious Globalism is the book, What's Wrong with the World and How to Fix It. We'll be back with David and your calls, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, after this. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Turn the world into one big Texas. Turn the world.
Yeah, that's George W.'s plan, the most toxic state in the union, turn the world into Texas. Oh, my. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. We were talking to an author who has written a book about globalism and how wonderful it is. And how if we just change our thinking, that will change the world, which is, by the way, a theory to which I subscribe, that we should change our thinking to change the world. I don't, however, think that that Americans should be competing with 5 billion people who are making less than $2 an hour and are willing and are desperate for any kind of work. I think that we should be helping countries develop their own internal economies rather than putting everybody in the world under the subjection of multinational corporations, which is, bottom line, the agenda of globalism and globalists. Jay in Humboldt County, California, on the line. Hey, Jay, I know you wanted to talk to our guest, but he bailed out during the break. He hung up the phone.
I don't blame him. I was going to ask you to hold his feet to the fire because you made the point, which I've lived through. When I graduated from college, recruiters came on campus looking for people who just had an education. And because there were so many manufacturing concerns in this country, if you had an education, they would train you, they'd fit your skills into theirs, and you'd have work. Because with a manufacturing base, you can support an entire economy, and without one, you can't. But he responded to you by saying, well, unemployment is still the same. And it's true, but people are doing dead-end jobs for no insurance and lousy pays. And this is the thing that these guys got to be held to, you know, over and over. Look, what's happened is, and you've said it a million times, and you've said it better than I'm saying it, but somebody's got to call these guys on, you know, when they start using things like employment figures and whatnot, because they have nothing to do with the issue.
Yeah, frankly, I was astounded that a guy who writes a book that is sort of spun as a New Age book, you know, it's like reaching out I don't have a better word for New Age, but it's the folks who, you know, independent thinkers, Ray called the creative, I'm forgetting the phrase, but in any case, you know, this new generation of people who are not, you know, identifying themselves as Democrats or Republicans, the cultural creatives.
Right.
And reaching out to them and pitching them the same tragic story that with the olive tree and the Lexus was pitched to us by Tom Friedman, which is that globalism will solve all problems. And in fact, what globalism does is it enriches multinational corporations. They're the only beneficiaries of it. And it trashes local economies over and over again.
Well, if we had to go to war, heaven forbid, we couldn't do it. We don't have the manufacturing base. And you know,
we don't make our own military uniforms in this country anymore. We buy the fabric from China. We can't make a nuclear missile. We can't make a destroyer right now without buying chips from China. And they're threatening us with nuclear weapons?
Yeah. I think, you know, if people have a chance, they should get a look at that old series called Victory at Sea. And there's one of the programs, it's a World War II series, and there's a program showing the build-up for D-Day. And the amount of material that we massed in England was what made us win that war.
Sure.
And we have no base. We couldn't do it again.
No, we're in deep trouble right now. I mean, Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., the policies of Bill Clinton, the trade policies of Bill Clinton, and the policies of George W. Bush, those four presidents in this context, I mean, Bill Clinton did a lot of good things. I don't want to take away from him all the many good things he did. But in this context, in those areas, those four presidents have sold this country down the tubes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here, one other point I just want to say, and I'll shut up. These folks who say, well, yeah, you know, there's less unemployment, part of that may be because people are holding two jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the point. I mean, when you got 44, 46, 48 million people in the United States who have no health insurance, they have no health insurance because they don't have a decent job. And you got all these people working two jobs, three jobs is not uncommon. I mean, it's just over the top. Rick in Pittsburgh, we got about a half a minute. Rick, is it quick? Hey, Rick, you're live and on the air. Maybe Rick's not there. Nick, I'm sorry. Hey, Nick, I'm not reading it right. Nick's not there, apparently. Okay. Matt in Arlington, Texas. Matt, I'm going to come back to you right after the break, because we've got a break coming up in 10 seconds here, and I know that you're going to want to take more than 10 seconds to speak. But the point is that international trade should be done for those products that a country cannot produce on its own. And if there are products that a country can produce on its own and should, because it may need it for its own security... We've lost our clothing industry. We need to be able to make clothing. We have lost our machine tool industry. We need to be able to make machine tools. We're losing our steel industries. We've lost our computer industry. IBM just sold out to China. This is not a good thing for the United States. It's just not. 29 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Day after day, I'm more confused.
That's because you've been listening to Karl Rove.
But I look for the light through the pouring rain.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Hartman, along with you in the real free speech zone. Louise over there answering the phones. It's a 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Matt in Arlington, Texas, on the line. Hey, Matt, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I'm sorry, but like your last caller, not surprised that the guy failed. Your guests really ought to research their books a little better when they come on. I'm sure you're familiar with Vandana Shiva.
Yeah, I am.
I've never met one of these guys that she couldn't whoop their butt. You know, you ought to mention in these cases that, like she says, there's this myth going around among these people that all these poor third worlders couldn't possibly scrape a living together, and Monsanto is destroying systems of agriculture that they've had functioning fine for 10,000 years.
Yeah,
whatever.
Same in Mexico with our corn imports down there. We're, you know, free trade is wiping out small farmers all over the world, and it's doing it in the name of saving poverty-stricken people, as if they're too stupid to figure out how to get their act together. In most cases, I've done international relief work. I've worked in the third world, and you know, to the point where in 1980 I was in Uganda. We took over the Numala prison farm, turned it into a refugee station, and I had people. I mean, I literally had children die in my arms. One of my jobs in the morning was to go through the people that were there and pick out the people who died overnight of starvation and the diseases associated with it and take them out and bury them with a bulldozer. I mean, I've seen it. And I can tell you, the places in the world where famine is the worst and where poverty is the greatest, that famine and that poverty is not caused by a lack of international trade. It's caused by a collapse of internal political systems. It's usually caused by war. And usually
or us.
Yeah, or us. Well, you know, usually we're the ones supporting those folks. Well,
right.
In many cases, we're. I don't want to paint the United States with a broad brush like that because China supports dictators, Russia supports dictators, France supports dictators. I mean, there's no shortage of villains to go around. But the bottom line is just quite fundamentally, international trade is not the solution to the world's problems. Yes, we have to change our thinking, which David Schwerin points out, and I agree with him. But that's not the way that we need to change our thinking. Matt,
I got one more real quick point. I had a friend, dinner with a friend last night who I hadn't seen in a while, and he works installing big machinery and fabrication plants for electronics. Mm-hmm. And he gave me all these firsthand stories about all the stuff being sucked into China.
Yeah.
And he said in particular, he talked to one employee who said they looked at the books, and they were just barely breaking even. So put on your tinfoil hat and start thinking, you know, maybe the rats are abandoning the ship of America and starting to, you know, put their bets with China that's going to be the next place that they're going to be able to turn into.
Oh, absolutely. The president of the CEO of General Electric last year said, when I look to the future, I think of China, China, China. And I mean, that's, you know, the Bush administration pushing this stuff. It was Jack Welch. He is gone. It was Jack, and thanks for your call. It was Jack Welch, the guy who was the CEO of General Electric, who first, and this is a big piece about this in the Wall Street Journal, front page of the Wall Street Journal about 2 months ago, who first went to India back in 1997, as I recall, and to sell GE products to the Indians, and got a sales pitch from them to him about, why don't you outsource some of your office applications, your accounting, your phone answering to us, because there's this voice over IP stuff, we get cheap long distance rates, we can do this stuff here. Jack Welch started the avalanche of outsourcing in the United States. The guy is considered a hero. I consider him a sociopath. I think what he did was terrible. 1-866-889-8894. Nick in Pittsburgh. Hey, Nick.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind today?
The whole issue with the guy that wrote the book here, they're espousing this philosophy. I really don't like the idea that we, just because we can buy things for less now in this country because they're being made in foreign countries, that we should accept that. This whole Walmart idea that, you know, when like he said too, look at how much money the Americans are saving. There's something so inherently wrong in that because it's not saving that, you know, because we want to be saving or anything like that. It's because we can't afford them or because jobs are gone. It's, again, a part of this that's all flipped on its head.
It's the rationalization of slavery, Rick, Nick, is what he, is what he's doing. I mean, you could say the same thing back 200 years ago. The farmers would say, oh, look at how much money we're saving with our labor costs because we've got slaves. Well, look at how much money we're saving right now by being able to shop at Walmart because we've got slaves in China who are willing to do our work for us. We didn't end slavery in the United States. We merely exported it.
Yeah, it's quite a shame. The other thing is, too, why, if these people think what we're doing is so great and it's the way to go, why don't they move to China also, the CEOs and the executives and the proponents of this philosophy, why don't they move to China, move to Mexico, move to Indonesia, whatever it is, where they can live under those systems and reap the rewards of those systems instead of reaping the rewards of our system?
Well,
here,
this proves the point about it's not about what's best for China or what's best for the United States. It's about what's best for them, because what you'll find is that in China, for example, you've got people, Chinese, indigenous Chinese, who run, who own factories, who are becoming multimillionaires. And what are they doing? They're buying condominiums in Hong Kong. They're getting out of China. And, I mean, in Mexico, you've got Mexicans who have become millionaires, multimillionaires with the Maquiladora families, factories. What are they doing? They're immigrating to the United States. People want to live in the high-end, comfortable places. They don't want to live where the labor is cheap, and then the CEO class is able to do that. These guys aren't going to move to China because they don't want to live there, but they will move their company to the Cayman Islands. I mean, that's what Halliburton did. You know, Dick Cheney setting up a phony shell company in the Cayman Islands for Kellogg, Brown, and Root so that they don't have to pay any U.S. taxes, and then they get billions of dollars from us taxpayers. I mean, this is just wrong. This is just wrong.
It's dead wrong. It's right. And this is what they don't want to understand and see, that it's just inherently wrong, and you're not American. You can't claim that you're an American anymore if they care. They don't care about the common good, the public domain, or Americans as Americans. It's just so inherently wrong.
Well, at the risk of mind-reading my previous guest, I would guess, and I did spend about 2 hours with his book. I haven't read it cover to cover, but I read probably solidly half of it. I would guess that what he would say is that saying that we're an American is part of the problem, that people must stop identifying themselves regionally, tribally, nationally, and start thinking of themselves in terms of citizens of the world. And there is an important truth in that, but not when it comes to economies. You throw open the doors like that, and suddenly what you have is an entire world full of poverty.
Well, the only thing I've started referring to myself as is a Democrat or a Republican.
There you go.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot, Nick.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And in fact, you know, I hope that many of my listeners right now who consider themselves good Republicans, I hope that you will get active in the Republican Party. And of course, I mean, you know, always I'm calling, my call for action is join the Democratic Party, participate. If you're a Green, join the Green Party and get active and join the Democratic Party. You can join two political parties. And because we need people infiltrating the Democratic Party and taking it back from the neocons and the DLC Democrats, the Evan Bayh bunch, the B-A-Y-H, you know, Evan Bayh of Indiana, the guys, the DLC guys who are hell-bent for leather on destroying this country with their free trade philosophy and their corporatism. And that's in the Democratic Party. And then, of course, the entire Republican Party with... Well, frankly, I can't think of any exceptions. Has been taken over by them. We need to take this country back. Scott in Pittsburgh on the line. Hey, Scott, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman program.
Yes, and welcome to our market. You're fresh air.
Well, thank you, and thanks for listening on WPTT. What's up?
I have to say that I agree with you on 70% of the issues. I am a conservative, which is kind of odd that I agree with you on 70% of the issues. But I really think that the conservatives have been buying stuff from the Bush administration that obviously is not conservative. It's establishment, big money, Republicanism.
Yeah,
and
or corporatism.
And the one thing that was interesting about this guest, and I have to say that conservatives have been against globalism, as well as people on what I would term more of the left. It just seems as though the past few presidents have been buying it hook, line, and sinker. But my view is, if you listen to what he said, he asked you, are you a humanitarian? He was trying to push redistribution of wealth, which is basically what's going on here, under the guise of humanitarianism.
Yeah. Well, it's not even redistribution of wealth. It's not redistribution of wealth in the classic sense of let's equalize wealth, in the Marxist sense. It's redistribution of wealth in the sense of you're going to have a very wealthy and powerful CEO elite who will rule the world, and then everybody else gets to be a terrified worker. And this is not just some weird thing that I thought up yesterday. You want the world actually was like this for about 1,000 years. It was called the era of feudalism. And if you want to read about it, read Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You've got the Scrooge, the Ebenezer Scrooge, and Bob Marley's of the world. It wasn't Bob Marley. Who is Scrooge and Marley? Whatever his partner's name, first name was. In any case, you've got Scrooge and Marley who own the companies, and then you've got the Bob Cratchits of the world, the terrified workers. And please, Mr. Scrooge, may I have a lump of coal to warm my...
No, you may not. It's a lump of coal will cost an extra sixpence. You can't do that.
Oh, please, Mr. Scrooge, may I have medical care for my son? He's going to die.
No, you can't. Profits first.
And that's the world that these guys want to take us to.
Well, you know, there again, he was using the humanitarian guys as though we're going to help them by us all making $6 an hour.
Yeah, and it doesn't work that way.
But all I can say is thanks for coming to the marketplace here in Pittsburgh. And I hope you could make some of the fellow conservatives, whether they're Democrat or Republican, realize that I think the Republican Party is moving towards the Eastern establishment, old money, money grubbing. It's not conservative. They're just using that as a way to foist their programs on other people.
Yeah, well said, Scott. Thank you.
Thanks.
They're not only are they not conservatives, they're radicals. They are right-wing extremists. If you look in, go pick up a copy of the 1987 American Heritage Dictionary. This was the year before the dictionary company got bought out by a multinational corporation. And look at the classic definition of the word fascism. The definition that Benito Mussolini came up with when Mussolini invented the word fascism. And right there in the American Heritage Dictionary, 1987, you can buy a used copy from abebooks.com. Fascism is the merging of state and business interests combined with belligerent nationalism. Period. You know, Mussolini's idea, the symbol for fascism in Italy, was a bundle of sticks with a rope around it with an axe sticking out of the top. And his theory was that an individual stick can be broken, a bundle of sticks cannot be broken. And it wasn't actually, that wasn't Mussolini's idea. I mean, that's the old Roman symbol, the symbol of the Roman Empire. And his bundle was, he said, you know, okay, the big challenge that the Italians were facing in the 1920s, after, you know, a couple hundred years after the collapse, 600 years after the collapse of the Roman Empire, was how do you build a government that's going to last? How do you build a government that's going to be stable, that's going to withstand the slings and arrows of outrageous time, you know, of experience, of difficulty, of all the, you know, the change, the Industrial Revolution, the agricultural, how do you deal with this? How do you create a government that is sufficiently stable that it can survive? Because you have to keep in mind, all of these people, none of these folks set out to say, I'm going to be the dictator of the world, and I'm going to be a bad guy. No, they all started out by saying, what's the best thing? Conservative, liberal, Democrat, communist, dictator, I don't care who it is, Mao, Pol Pot, killing 2 million of his own people, he thought he was doing the best thing. Hitler thought he was doing the best thing. They were nuts. They were wrong. But all of these guys, in order to be able to get up in the morning and look yourself in the mirror, you have to believe that you're doing the best thing. And they all had a rationalization. And the rationalization that Mussolini had was that if government can be relatively weak, corporations standing by themselves can be relatively weak. If you merge the government and the corporations together, you will have something that is very strong, and a strong, stable government, in his mind, was a social good, was a good thing. And so he dissolved the parliament, the Italian parliament, as I recall, in 1929. I may have the years wrong, but you can find this. It's all, you know, Wikipedia, .com, is it? Wikipedia? Or any encyclopedia. He dissolved the parliament, and he replaced it with the Camio de Fascistio Corporationis. Pardon my lousy Italian, the Chamber of the Fascist Corporations. So if you lived in Detroit, Michigan, and you used to be represented by Congressman John Conyers, and the biggest corporation in Detroit, Michigan was General Motors, General Motors would now appoint the person who was going to sit in the seat that John Conyers used to sit in the Chamber of Fascist Corporations, in the Parliament, because they were the economic powerhouse in Detroit. Of course, it never. And now there are some who are saying, Well, that's sort of what happens now, isn't it? Not to use the example of Detroit and John Conyers. If anything, that kind of gives the lie to it, because John Conyers is a good man. But we have a number of members of Congress who are pretty openly the toads and stooges of the stooges and toadies of their industries back home. And, you know, is that a good thing? I don't think so. I'm very impressed by what Maine and Arizona have done with their public election laws, allowing anybody to get into elections with public financing of elections. In the UK, they looked at the situation. They said, how do we deal with this? How do we deal with the possibility of fascism arising in a democracy? Because it's always a threat. And they said, okay, well, we're going to make it that if you run for Parliament, if you run for the House of Commons, you can't spend over £100,000. And anybody who spends any money on your behalf, that's considered you spending the money. And that's one of the reasons why there are election cycles there. You know, Tony Blair calls an election, and 4 weeks later, the election's held. Because nobody has enough money to spend for more than a couple of weeks. And it works quite well. Now, we can't do that here in the United States because the Supreme Court has said the First Amendment would protect that. And the Buckley versus Viejo decision of the Supreme Court and the First National Bank of Boston versus Bilotti decision both have put the crimp in that. Now, frankly, these are both 5-4 decisions. At least First National Bank was. I think Buckley was. And I think that they need to be revisited because they're not serving democracy to say that a corporation is a person, a corporation should have free speech rights, and because a corporation doesn't have a mouth and can't vote, its speech has to be done with money. And so cash is the same thing as speech. I don't think that's what the founders intended. 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I heard a minister the other day talking about the great injustice and evil of the men in white robes, the Ku Klux Klan that roamed the country in the South. And they did great wrong to civil rights and to morality. And now we have black-robed men, and that's what you're talking about.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled.
Oh, he did such a great job.
You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate.
Oh, a compassionate conservative.
You gave them the old hocus-pocus. You misdirected them with 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
And it worked.
You played them both right to perfection, despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them, let those blue states complain.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Just so long as I'm the dictator. Well, every now and then the mask falls and you see the real face behind it. And sometimes it's a little spooky. George W. Bush flailing about here. Karl Rove in deep doo-doo, as they say, deep trouble. And at the same time, I mean, there's real issues. There are real issues out there. For the millions of hardworking Americans who are struggling to make ends meet, and I'm sorry, I don't have an attribution on this story of the day. I believe it might be from the Think Progress blog, but I'm not sure. So if I'm violating somebody's copyright here, let me apologize in advance. For the millions of hardworking Americans who are struggling to make ends meet, it is no surprise to learn that workers' wages are not keeping pace with their productivity. Gee. Surprise, surprise. According to a recent study by the Economic Policy Institute, worker productivity has grown almost 3 times faster than wages since George Bush became president. During that same time, 70% of the nation's income growth, 70%, has gone straight into corporate coffers. Louise says this is the Center for American Progress came up with this. Thank you. It's 70% of the nation's income growth going in straight into corporate coffers. And what are those corporations doing? Increasingly, they're incorporating offshore so they don't have to pay any taxes. So you and I get stuck with the bill for the commons that they're using. Corporations are using our air, our water, our police departments, our fire departments, our educated workforce, our roads, our infrastructure, our rights of way, our money supply, our court system. They're using all those things, and they're saying, now, you guys pay for it. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it tragic, really, the way the cons have done this? I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, to our radio program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system all across the United States and Canada, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org and whiterosesociety.org, podcast on iTunes. Welcome back to our program. What's going on with our environment? What's going on with the energy bill before Congress? What's going on with the cons selling us down the tubes and wrecking the planet at the same time? Ed Hopkins may have some insights into that. He's the director of the Sierra Club's Environmental Quality Program. Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks for having me on your show, Tom.
Oh, glad to have you here. Before we get into the energy bill, which was the main thing I wanted to talk with you about, something happened last night that I saw this thing on ABC News. Did a story on the hurricanes and the fact that we now have five named storms. It's never happened that early, ever since 1852 when the federal government first started keeping records. And, you know, they talked about this, and they're more ferocious, and they're coming on earlier. And they got some guy on, and he says, yes, it's because the water temperature in the ocean has gone up 1 degree Fahrenheit, or 1 degree Celsius, as far as we can tell, and in the Atlantic, and that's what's fueling these storms. And then he says, but it appears to be a natural variation. And I'm screaming at the TV, where did they get this guy? Who is this guy? It was just like, you know, when I was in Australia, the last time I was in Australia was 3 years ago. They were having the big fires in Sydney that were coming right up against Sydney. And ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, they're doing the evening news. And the weather forecaster guy gets on, and he's talking about the weather. And he's talking about where the fires are and this and that and the other thing. And he says, well, according to our calculations of how global warming is affecting Australia, we can expect to see more fires in this area, more drought in this area, more rain in this area. And they got the whole thing all mapped out. And they're talking about it just as if, hey, it's no big deal. Why is the American media so terrified to even address this? Ed?
Are you asking me that question?
Yeah.
Well, I think the American media has done a pretty poor job covering environment and public health issues over the last few years. And the incident that you spoke about is just one manifestation of that. Coverage has been very poor.
Yeah, I just don't get it. You know, why aren't green organizations like the Sierra Club being interviewed when it comes to issues, the health of the forest, the health of the ocean? You know, you guys are more into the forest, but the health of the oceans, the health of the planet. I mean, it just blows my mind. Well, let's move on to the energy bill. There's an energy bill before Congress now. Tell us about it.
Well, Congress has had an opportunity to take us a step forward into the 21st century with the energy bill, and instead they seem to be taking us back to the 19th century with corporate welfare handouts to the oil industry and to the coal industry, wrecking some of the environmental protection laws that have been on the books for 30 years. And probably the most significant thing, or the issue that right now is the barrier in Congress to reaching an agreement on the energy bill, is the question of who is going to pay for the cleanup of the 1,800 public water systems in the United States that have been contaminated by a gasoline additive called MTBE. And the House of Representatives, under the leadership of Tom DeLay, has taken a very strong position. He thinks that we should let the MTBE manufacturers off the hook and make the public pay for cleaning up all these contaminated water supplies. The Senate, on the other hand, has taken the position that the oil companies and the MTBE manufacturers should pay the bill. And that is the single biggest issue right now that the House and the Senate are grappling with as they try to finish an energy bill.
And I'm speechless. This is, isn't MTBE one of the compounds that was involved in one of the NAFTA lawsuits?
Yes, it was, as a matter of fact.
Tell our listeners the story of that.
You know, I am not sure I know all the details of that, Tom, but as I understand it, California tried to ban MTBE, and a manufacturer of MTBE in Canada, California wanted to ban it on environmental grounds, and the manufacturer of that in Canada said that that would breach the NAFTA treaty. Is that right?
Yeah, NAFTA has a chapter, it's called Article 11 of NAFTA, which sets up these three-person tribunals and who decide trade disputes. And the United States Constitution has a clause in it which says that if we sign a treaty with another country, then that treaty becomes the law of the land and supersedes domestic laws. So what had happened, my recollection of what had happened, was that California had passed a law saying that they didn't want this stuff because it was contaminating lakes and rivers, and it was manufactured in Canada. And I may be mixing, there was also something around ethyl lead, and so I may be mixing these things up, but I don't think so. And the manufacturer, and under NAFTA now, not only have we surrendered our national sovereignty to other countries, we've surrendered it to multinational corporations. Under NAFTA, a multinational corporation can sit on the NAFTA tribunal in secret and rule on whether or not laws passed by the citizens of the United States are legal, or whether they're illegal restraints of trade, because of this provision in our Constitution that says that a treaty supersedes local or federal law. And so the manufacturers of this stuff came in and said, you have to carry this stuff, and if you don't, we're going to hit the state with all these fines and penalties. And you can actually, corporations can sue for loss of profits, not just, you know, not just actual damages, but potential damages they can sue for. And so we ended up with more MTBE. That's my recollection. I don't have the story right in front of me, but that's my recollection of how it happened.
Well, now we're trying to deal with the after effects of MTBE use, and who is going to pay for the roughly $30 billion in estimated cleanup costs to clean up all these drinking water supplies across the country?
1,800 communities.
1,800 communities. Many of them in California. Some 30 million people in California are served water by systems that have been contaminated with MTBE.
Right. This stuff is hydrophilic, is it? The water-seeking?
Yes. And it moves very quickly in groundwater, faster than gasoline, and that is one of the problems. It's just very difficult to clean up once it has contaminated groundwater.
So the conservatives, the Tom DeLay and these guys, they're all saying the corporations should not have to pay for the cleanup. Who's going to pay for the cleanup? They also don't want to have any government. These guys are saying, well, you know, small government, get rid of taxes, stop taxing people, do away with regulatory agencies like the EPA. What, do they just want us all to have cancer?
Well, actually, I think this exposes a good point of hypocrisy amongst those conservatives who say they want smaller government and lower taxes, because what they want to do is set up a new government program and fund that government program with taxpayer dollars and immunize the MTBE manufacturers and pay for the cleanup of water supplies out of this government program.
Incredible.
Does that sound like a conservative solution to government?
It sounds absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, this has passed the House and Senate, has it not?
Different versions of the energy bill have passed the House and the Senate. And in the House, again, Tom DeLay was one of the big pushers of immunizing the MTBE manufacturers. So that version got out of the House. And in the Senate, there is no similar provision. So MTBE manufacturers can still be held accountable under the Senate version for the cleanup costs. So now they're in a conference committee where the House and the Senate are trying to reconcile the two different versions of the energy bill. In this MTBE issue and the cleanup costs associated with that, is the main issue that is posing a barrier to an energy bill.
Because it's $30 billion bucks.
Because it's $30 billion bucks,
yeah.
Right.
And not to mention the $18 billion in corporate welfare that's in there. I guess they're agreeing on that.
Well, there is a lot of agreement on that, I'm afraid. And just one item of corporate welfare in the energy bill struck my interest in that both bills, the House and the Senate bills, are offering transition assistance for the oil companies to wean them off MTBE production.
Wait a minute. The most profitable industry in America, up until 3 years ago, was the pharmaceutical industry. It was the most profitable industry in America. In fact, now you see headlines in the Wall Street Journal that say things like ExxonMobil concerned about embarrassment of riches. They are making more money. They have more cash. They have so much cash left over that they're concerned that they may become acquisition targets. I mean, billions of dollars in their checking account that they don't know what to do with. The most profitable industry in America, and we're going to help them with corporate welfare to make the transition from polluting our water to not polluting our water?
That's basically it. The House bill would offer $2 billion. The Senate bill would offer only $1 billion. And this is for not producing a product that is poisoning our water supplies.
Right, right. Ed, where have we gone wrong?
Well, we have gone drastically wrong with the energy bill, and I think the basic problem is that Congress is controlled by the special interest. This is a bill that has basically been written by and for the energy companies, the oil companies, the coal industry, which has got a lot of corporate welfare in here, the nuclear power industry. That's where this bill is coming from.
Is this largely a partisan issue? Are the Democrats opposed to this and the Republicans in favor of it, or is it wide bipartisan support?
Well, there is fairly wide bipartisan support for this bill, unfortunately. The MTBE issue in particular is interesting because there are Republicans and Democrats on each side of the issue. Tom DeLay is pushing this in the House, but in the Senate, some of the people who are most strongly opposed to this are Republican senators in New Hampshire, like Judd Gregg and John Sununu.
Is that because their states are affected or because they're actually consistent with their philosophy?
Well, I'm not sure I can tease out the difference there, but New Hampshire is very much affected by this. There are 280 water supplies in New Hampshire that have been contaminated, and they know that the money that would go into this limited liability fund is not enough money to clean up all these water systems.
So they want to stick it to us even harder, presumably, eventually, or else simply not clean it up. This is incredible. What can people do about this, Ed Hopkins, Sierra
Club?
Well,
people should be telling their senators that the oil companies that caused the MTBE contamination problem should be held accountable for cleaning up, not to stick taxpayers with the bill.
Okay, and it's very simple to do that. You call its toll-free number. This is not a widely publicized number, but it actually works. It's the old Senate Office Building toll-free number, 1-877-SOB-USOB. SOB, the letter U, SOB, will get you the switchboard of Congress, and you simply ask for your senator or your congressman and a member of Congress. If you don't know, give me your zip code. Your senator, all you have to do is give me your state. You have two senators. Call 1-877-SOB-USOB and tell them that you want the energy bill defeated. And if they can't do that, at least get the MTBE bailout out of the thing. How's that?
That's a great message, Tom.
Okay, great. Ed Hopkins with the Sierra Club, sierraclub.org, right?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
For more information, sierraclub.org. Thanks a lot for being with us, Ed.
Thank you, Tom.
Much appreciated. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, hey, then.
was a new American way. No one serving those deserving, but there's less tax to pay. We abuse our might and mock the world as we say, don't mess with the U.S. of A. Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
And welcome back, my friends.
Did you watch the Sunshine State? How the scales got tipped to seal Al's fate? Jeb Bush winked, I told you so.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news. Speaking of news from the belly of the beast, Washington, D.C., our correspondent Greg Gorman is with us. Hey, Greg.
Hello, Tom. We're in the warm, humid belly of the beast today.
Oh, my. Okay. The image makes me cringe.
Right, exactly.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. But, yes, but we do have some good stuff to talk about, namely the Chief Justice's announcement, as well as the story that's been circulating that there is a lie, but let's call it a conundrum between the two stories of Karl Rove and Robert Novak about who told what to whom.
I was wondering how this counterspin. I mean, first
right.
they tried attacking the prosecutor. That didn't work. They tried attacking Valerie Plame. That didn't work. They tried attacking Joe Wilson. He fought back. That didn't work. And so now, then today, yesterday's talking points came out last night. For today was attack Judy Miller and Matt Cooper.
Make it
their fault. And, you know, maybe Robert Novak has some culpability in this. We don't want to bring down a good con, but, you know, maybe he does too. But attack the journalists.
Who were doing their job, who were trying to protect the source. I mean, this is what we're talking about. These talking points, I think, are very funny because I wasn't even sure how covert they were. So I went onto the RNC website yesterday.
They're right there.
Because, I wanted to see what they were saying about Ambassador Wilson. And, of course, his talking points were there. And sure enough, they're there. They're on the homepage.
Yep.
Everyone can read them.
Yeah,
so it's not some secret back room talking point.
No,
it's what they want people to know.
Talk show hosts get them an email about six hours early. That's all.
Right.
I mean, yeah,
right,
so
exactly.
So that Limbaugh and Hannity and all these guys can prepare their talk shows. And when they go on the air, they can send people to the RNC website.
Well, is it
flying? Are people buying it?
Well, you know what? And that's exactly what I think is so interesting is people are not only buying it, but if you say it often enough, it becomes the truth. So who's to say that every one of these excuses won't work? We're now going to blame the journalist. Let's blame Robert Novak. Let's blame Valerie Plame. Let's blame everyone. If you throw us enough bait, we'll take it. I think that's what they think.
Well, is it happening?
It seems to be working.
It does? You're kidding. this story is like picking up traction in the national press?
Well, you know. Yeah, I've heard a few things about it.
That's tragic. That's tragic. Okay, so you said the announcement from the Chief Justice.
Well, Chief Justice. I thought this is actually one of my favorite things about Washington. People can speculate all they want. We can comport ourselves in a way that makes us think that we know or don't know, but really we didn't know until today or until last night that the Chief Justice finally came out and said, "I'm not retiring." Now I feel a little vindicated because I don't know if I said it on your show, but I have been saying for a few weeks now, in the time that I've spent at the court, the Chief Justice did not strike me as the kind of man who would resign for any kind of political reason. He would only have resigned for health reasons, which is what I've been
saying. He's going to die in his chair.
Well, right, and now it turns out in his statement he says, I will work as long as my health allows me to.
Yeah.
So, of course, the White House and the administration, they're now, I wouldn't say reeling because they still have one, but they don't have two. People are going to be looking more closely now because now with the Rehnquist seat, we all know they'll be able to pretty much put another conservative there. We're now going to be focusing more on the O'Connor seat because that does need to be someone. It's an important job. It's an important position. Will it be a Hispanic? Will it be a woman? I think people are going to pay a little more attention now, especially now that we don't have to look forward to Rehnquist in the next few weeks or months.
Yeah, although, 3 years is a long time.
That's right. It's a long time.
Especially for somebody who's 80 years old and has cancer.
That's right. Oh, wait, it's a long time from now.
Yep. Okay. Greg Gorman, thanks so much, Greg, for the report today from Washington, D.C. Much appreciated. Always nice to hear your voice.
Always good to be with you, Tom.
Keep well. Stay well. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Truth in broadcasting for a change.
is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Hartman, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop in and say hi. Phil in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind today?
Hi. You know, you were showing how the Republican Party basically provides socialism for the rich in terms of giving actual taxpayer dollars.
It's not even socialism. I mean, it's really not socialism. It's,
well,
it's,
you know, that's kind of a joking way of, yeah, of saying it's a subsidy. There's another way that it's also done, and it's not. And I just discovered it this week because I left a company and I got beat out of the paycheck. Jeb Bush in the Republican legislature abolished the Florida Department of Labor.
Abolished altogether?
It don't exist.
Oh.
If you get beat out of your pay, unless you're an hourly worker, if you're an hourly worker, you can call on the wage and hour division of the U.S. Department of Labor. But if you're a salaried person and an employer beats you out of your wages or doesn't pay you your vacation days after they fire, whatever, you have to go out and hire a personal attorney.
On your own nickel.
On your own dime. So, you know, spend $3,000 to hire an attorney to collect a $2,000 paycheck. The state of Florida will do nothing for you. The few laws that affect workers, okay. In fact, for example, there's one that says if an employer compels you to do business on your own dime with another company, okay, under threat of losing your job, that's illegal. There's no enforcement. The state's attorney doesn't deal with that. You'd have to take this guy into private court to enforce the laws of the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Because Jeb got rid of it.
Welcome to Bush World, Phil.
Right. So this is why they say, you know, what he says, he wants to make Florida, you know, a happy place for employers to bring their, you know, their call center jobs, minimum wage jobs. Those are the jobs that come to Florida.
Sure. All we have to do if we want to compete with China and India is become like China and India.
Right. Lower
become
poor.
Living. That's right. That's all we have to do. And that's the globalism mantra. Let's just compete with everybody in the world on their level.
Right. And that's why you still have people a year later up in northern Florida and also in central or the west coast here in Cape Coral and other places still living in tents and in trailers because the insurance companies are not paying off. And the guy who's in charge of his name is Crist. He wants to be governor and he's in charge. He's the attorney general, so to speak. He won't do anything for the displaced people because he wants campaign contributions from them for running for governor. So a year
from the
later,
insurance companies, you mean?
Right. So a year later, these people are still negotiating with insurance companies who are not interested in paying off.
Right. Yeah. Quick question, Phil. It's becoming increasingly evident, I think, to people all over the world that Florida, and you're living there down in Tampa, that Florida is suffering the consequences of global warming. We've been seeing it now for almost a decade in Alaska.
Right.
You know, another part of the United States. I mean, just looking at the U.S., how the U.S. is impacted. There's a lot of countries that have been complaining about this. You know, some of the Pacific Islands, you know, the ocean is creeping up on them and things like this. But we saw the tundra melt in Alaska. We're seeing the death of polar bears, you know, the general flora and fauna changing and things like that. But now with this 1 degree increase in the temperature of the Atlantic Ocean, hurricanes are really picking up in Florida. Is the local Florida press, the national press won't touch this with a 10-foot pole, is the local Florida press pointing out in any way at all that global warming might have something to do with the horrible weather you guys are getting?
To a certain extent. But one of the things that the St. Petersburg Times had a front-page story about maybe 4 weeks ago on the Sunday paper is how hundreds and thousands of acres have been plowed under of wetland despite the assurance that there would be no net loss of wetlands in Florida.
Right.
And despite that, there's been a dramatic increase of loss in wetlands in Florida, and Jeb Bush has stood by and done absolutely nothing for it. This is where we get our fresh water to drink.
Yeah.
Okay. We're not. You know. They did.
Yeah. The swamp is the kidney of the state.
Right, because they did build a desalinization plant, and it's been a colossal failure, and it hasn't brought enough water to wash your cat.
Right.
So today, for the foreseeable, for the next 10 days, it's 93 degrees every day and rain every day.
Yeah.
Every afternoon. But the thing is that the destruction of the wetlands is going to have a tremendous impact because there's been a tremendous growth in population here.
Yeah.
And all those people like to drink water, they like to take baths, and they like to water their lawns.
Well, given all the hurricanes that are coming, Phil, I think all you need to do is get a bunch of cisterns, start catching the runoff from your roof, and you'll get fresh water. Phil, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along.
Okay.
But good point and well said. And geez, that's incredible. Florida has done away with their Department of Labor. Veda in Seattle's on the line. Hey Veda, thanks for calling. 866-889-8894, telephone number. You're live and on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I want to thank you for your clarity and really educating so many people about the foundations of democracy. It's really inspiring. I'm actually calling. I wanted to let you know that last night on Nightline on ABC, they had a half an hour on the most truthful presentation of the impacts of global warming.
Really?
That I've seen in the media in years.
Which is the flip side of the ABC newscast that I caught.
And I couldn't find on their site how to access it. Maybe somebody can do that. But it was extraordinary because it's so much worse than we think. It's frightening what's happening.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to call was to let you know that, because it's always a pleasure that there's actually something valuable in the media.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also,
well done, ABC, except for the fact that it probably ran at, what, 11 o'clock? Midnight?
11:30,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm really wanting people to know that I am a vegan animal rights activist, and people do not understand that eating animals and animal products, it's not just a personal lifestyle choice anymore. We use half of the water in this country
to grow factory farm animals.
Factory farming, and a third of the oil.
Yeah.
That we use is related to factory farming.
Yeah, I mean the simple math is that the amount of food that you get out of 1 pound of soybeans, to get that same amount of protein, you would have to take I have something caught in my throat.
Yeah.
You probably have the numbers better than I do. How many pounds of grain does it take to create 1 pound of cattle of beef?
I actually don't know that number. The number that I do know is in this country, we slaughter 1 million animals an hour.
Yeah, yeah. No,
that's
but
300 a second. And the number, so all of that poop and all of that urine, besides, the use of the water and the oil, but all of that quote, excrement, goes into the groundwaters in this country.
Yeah.
And our wells are just poisoned all over. And the industries, it's so fascinating when I speak to progressive Democrats, there's such a disconnect because the industries have done such a good job of making it look pristine and presentable, and it's completely unsustainable.
Yeah, I agree with you, Veda, and thanks for making the point. In fact, in Pennsylvania now, you have more than 100 communities that have passed laws saying that corporations don't have rights of persons, in large part because those corporations wanted to impose factory farms in communities that didn't want them. They wanted to just retain family farms. But it is, animal agriculture, which is not going to go away. I mean, this is our society. But the extent that we can diminish it and reduce it, it would be a very healthy thing for us, both physically healthy in terms of our eating and a healthy thing for our planet. It's just absolutely the case. There's also an interesting intersection between your point about the excrement and what's coming out of the Bush administration with regard to Karl Rove,
Let me see. That would be 145 million and a half tons of the
refuse.
Yeah, refuse per every day. And by the year, let me figure, over 53 million tons of
Manure,
yeah. By comparison, the pyramid of the pharaoh Cheops weighs about 690 million tons, which means that every 4 3/4 days, you've got a pile of this
excrement.
Yeah.
There you go. What is coming out of Washington, D.C.? 1-866-889-8894. Xavier in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Xavier.
Morning, Tom.
Morning.
I was looking for those numbers. I had them on the...
They're actually in the back of a book I wrote called The Prophet's Way. There's this whole list of all that stuff, but I don't have my own books here. So.
Yeah. Well, the point I wanted to ask about is you were talking earlier about MTBE and water supplies and
yes,
things
sir.
Like that. Well, first of all...
Is your community one of the many communities in California whose water supply has been contaminated with MTBE?
I should know that, but I don't.
You're not sure?
I don't know,
okay.
Yeah. But, first of all, capitalism supposedly... if you took all the costs into account, then it would fix things like that. But the thing I'm concerned about is there's like companies like Bechtel that are buying up water systems and privatizing water
mm-hmm.
all around the world, and I'm wondering if there might be some kind of a drive towards that. And I had a question, specific question on that too, Tom. I don't know if you didn't know the answer to this, but I heard that in some third world countries they're actually buying up water rights and affecting the legal system to where you're not allowed to collect water on your own roof.
Bolivia. Yeah,
there's
a whole chapter about it in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And you can easily find it on the internet. Type in, just Google, I'm guessing this would be probably the fastest, easiest way, Google Bechtel, Bolivia, and water and privatization, and it'll probably pop right up. What happened, I want to say Cochabamba or something, I forget the name of the community, but something like that. Bechtel came in, and it wasn't just Bechtel, it was Bechtel and a couple of other companies, came into Bolivia and basically privatized their water supply. And I think this might have been part of one of the WTO things, if you want loans from us, you've got to open your water supplies to privatization. They came in, they bought up the water supply, and you had to have a permit to have water, including runoff from your own roof. And the people rebelled, and there was an open rebellion. And the people took back, and the other thing that they did, the corporation did when they took over the water supply, is they stopped supplying water to the outlying regions because it wasn't profitable to supply water to those people, those long pipelines where they had to pump the water upstream and, you know, uphill. And they just said, you know, we can't make money doing this. And so they stopped supplying the water. So there was essentially a revolt. I mean, there was like a revolution in that country. The people said, no, ain't going to do it. So what Bechtel did was they, with Holland, it was possible for a corporation to sue for damages. And so they opened up a division or created some sort of an affiliation with a company in Holland. And then they sued from Holland, against the government to get back their profits.
Okay.
And, I'm certain I'm missing some pieces of the story here. The whole story is in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Or, as I said, you can probably easily find it on the web. It's not a secret. It's a fairly well-known story.
Yeah. So, I used that, I was talking to a conservative about that who's actually turning, progressive, and I didn't have the exact attribution to that.
What you'll find, Xavier, is that most conservatives who are really and truly conservative, that is, they really have a political philosophy and they pay attention to politics and they're not just BS. For all things computer, Tom Hartman with you. We'll be right back.
Seize the day. Don't be afraid and don't delay.
Yeah, go for it, my friends. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. Boy, it's as bumper music. I mean, it's a nice message, but boy, is that strange music. It's like I'm back in church. It appears that Karl Rove, President Bush's chief of staff, writes Jason Leopold, may have lied to the FBI in October of 2003, a federal crime, when he was questioned by federal agents investigating who was responsible for leaking information about Valerie Plame to the media. Now, this is interesting. This is the same law that Martha Stewart broke, lying to the FBI. Wouldn't it be ironic if Rove got nailed, not for outing a CIA agent, but for lying about it? And it's like Nixon. It wasn't the break-in that he went to, that he almost got, he would have gotten impeached over. I mean, they drew up articles of impeachment in the House, and he decided to resign because he knew that they had the votes to impeach him. Wouldn't it be incredible if what Rove gets bounced out for is the whole thing about lying to the, you know, rather than going on. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Scott on the line in Portland. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Yes, hello, Tom. There's a break in the Brandon Mayfield versus John Ashcroft case here in Portland.
Oh, interesting. Tell me about it.
Well,
Brandon Mayfield, first of all, is the guy who was falsely accused of being involved with the bombing in Spain because the FBI bungled a fingerprint and they locked this guy up without access to counsel, violated his constitutional rights, and I'll let you carry it from there.
Yeah, this is a violation of civil rights case, and of course, Jerry Spence, the esteemed attorney from Wyoming without a cowboy hat, is making his case.
Here in Portland?
Yes, he is.
Oh, I should say hi to him. We've blurbed each other's books.
Well, you know, he said, for instance, quote, "It's a bunch of malarkey," referring to the FBI's assertion that they still think that there's a positive ID on the fingerprints. We all couldn't believe they said that.
Wow.
Also, they went on to say that even though in the affidavit for Brandon Mayfield before the judge in an effort to get him to be held as a material witness, they said it was 100% positive. Now the government attorneys are saying 100% isn't relevant. So Jerry Spence made the comment that they had before the affidavit that the Spanish National Police said that those prints never matched and never would agree with the United States and the FBI on that.
Incredible.
So that's the latest from Portland, and okay. The arguments later this afternoon.
This afternoon, this thing is in court.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you, Scott, for that update.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. This The Abuse of Power by John Ashcroft. This is what happens when you pass Patriot Acts and you make people hysterical and you ramp up terror alert, terror alert, terror alert every other week running up to an election campaign. Of course, there hasn't been one since then, at least not nationwide. We had to have all, you got to scare people. It's a tragedy. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.